What is going on, everybody? I don't know why my image was so small right there. Off to a great start. We are back. Welcome back to the Serious Angler Podcast, powered by the folks at X2 Power Batteries. And unfortunately, we are again captainless. Andy is battling some fun stuff going on right now, sickness-wise. So we are without the captain tonight. So apologies on that. I know we already got a comment in here saying, Panger, my favorite guide in the world, the same podcast. Yes, please. He's either referring to Andy, who's on every podcast, or he's referring to our guide friend, Mr. Garrett Paquette, who is going to be joining us here for the first part of tonight. Looking at it now, I think it definitely makes more sense. He's talking about Paquette. But either way, the captains always one of our favorites, of course. But we are back with another show. We got two segments for you guys tonight. We got our pal, Garrett Paquette, as I just mentioned, joining us for the first part here, catching up with him, talking about his approach to Logan Martin and his top 10 there. And I'm sure we'll have many rabbit holes that we'll get into with Garrett as he, we'll talk about it with him, but he could be an interesting first hour depending, what happens. But, nonetheless, when we get wrapped up with Garrett, we have Mr. Adam Bartuzik. If you guys have been around the show for a couple of years, you know, Adam was a big part of, us getting off the ground. He was a constant guest, but also was part of the fantasy fishing crew for the first year or two there. So Adam is joining us as well as Matt Pangrack from Bass Talk Live. So we're getting both those guys on there because one, they're going to catch up with both of them, but also two, they were team partners for the St. Jude, the Bass Classic over there that raised a whole bunch of money for the St. Jude's Foundation. And they got the dub. They won, which is a pretty stout event. There's a lot of big hammers in that event. It's definitely something to, pretty cool thing to take home. So we'll be talking about that and a whole bunch of other stuff for that for a little part two. But a couple things for you guys before we get into the first part of our show here and get Garrett on is we mentioned last week that we were running a Blackfish gear giveaway. What we were going to do is basically you had to leave us a rating and review on MP3. And then you had bonus entries if you did for the other shows on the Serious Angler Podcast Network, like Kayak Fishing Weekly, Lure Lab, and Biz from the Bass Boat. So you got extra entries if you did that. If you've already left a review before, just send us a DM or something or an email just saying that you've already done so. And we added you into the running. Basically, what I'm telling you is you got until the end of the show. Please let me know because I'm going to, during our midsection here, I'm going to pick a winner and we're going to announce the winner at the end of the show. I will try to, if that person has a contact info, I will try to contact them either via social or on here, but also we'll just announce that on social media and on here if they're listening. If you do listen, it's your name, you know, you've won, reach out to us. We'll get you hooked up. Again, it's two Blackfish Gear Sun hoodies that you get to choose your model and size and color. So we're leaving it pretty open-ended for y'all, but beyond that, right now, if you are a Omnia Fishing Premium Pro member, which we've talked to you guys at length of the advantages of it, right now you can get $200 off of the Shimano Metanium DCs right now. So if you're looking for a wicked nice reel, you're looking at these reels like, man, these things are so much freaking money, and you don't want to pay that much. Well, now you get basically almost have it half off, which is quite a steal for a reel of that price. So now you can take advantage of it if you're a pro member. But regardless if you're a pro member or not, they're also doing 20% off of swim jigs and spinner baits. Perfect time being the spring, going into summer. And that is going to last until May 14th. So you have a good week from today to take advantage of that sale. But some fun stuff happening down there at the Omnia Fishing Folk. And I think without further ado, let me get our first guest on here for tonight. Mr. Garrett Paquette. What's going on, man?
How you doing, man? It's been a minute, hasn't it?
It's been a little while, and we talked about this with somebody a while back, but dude, there's so many guests. I have like a laundry list of guests that I absolutely love having on, And if I could, if it was humanly possible, I'd have them on every week. But if I did that, there'd be like 60 people on every show. So it's one of those things I feel guilty though sometimes, because there's like guys like yourself that I want to have on consistently. Then you get down like a 3-month rabbit hole and it's like, oh damn, we haven't had Garrett on forever. But dude, it's good to get you back on here. But
I appreciate it. Yeah,
hopefully tornadoes are not joining by saying,
I do want to start by saying, if I randomly become disconnected or like a tree comes across the screen, there is tornadoes I think all around my house, which is kind of, we never have had a tornado, but don't be alarmed. That's just what's happening tonight. So there's that.
Garrett has already said he's taking one for the team tonight so that we can have a viral clip of a tree coming through his house on our live show. Hopefully no tornadoes are joining the show with you tonight. Hopefully none.
No, it should be fine.
Well, tornadoes aside, how has old Michigan been treating you thus far this spring?
It's been good. Yeah, I just, like you said, I was kind of open, and I feel like it was a little unfortunate because that was like the two best weeks of fishing, probably. You know, just that end of April, early May is always special, and I kind of missed out on that. But it's, I'm sure it's like most places. It's been good. It's been a little different though. Like it was extremely warm in March, early March for us, and it kind of pushed some things along. And then April got really cold and kind of got things back to normal. And then now it's super hot again. Like we just had a bunch of fish come up on beds last week, which is pretty early for us. Usually we're like mid-May, end of May. We're looking at bedfish, and it sounds like I haven't been out, you know, in 10, 12 days, but it sounds like they're just littered everywhere. So, which sucks. I love the pre-spawn fishing. That's my favorite thing to do around here. And I kind of missed out on that. And then, St. Clair has been, I mean, it's always good. It's always, I mean, it's, you know, obviously it's premier, but we've had, kind of like an invasive algae come in this season to where a lot of the good fishing spots, you can't even touch the bottom with your baits, or you have algae on it instantly. So that's kind of been a pain in the butt to deal with. So we're kind of refishing zinc there using jerk baits, flukes, drop shot, of course, but the bottom fishing, like with Ned rigs and swim baits, is kind of thrown out the window. So that's been a little bit of a change that I didn't see coming.
Dang. And then on top of obviously the St. Clair pressure, it's probably
fishing
pretty tricky right now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it seems like everyone from Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, anywhere within 500 miles is here to fish. And they should be. It's just awesome. It's like an endless supply of smallmouth. But it's been slightly different, which is fine. You know, it gives you something new to figure out. But that's been what's happened in Michigan. I'm going to be out there starting tomorrow for the next, I think, like 12 days straight, doing a bunch of guide trips and tearing them up.
Heck yeah, dude. We were last night we had our fantasy fishing preview for Murray, and I don't know how we got down this rabbit hole, but we started teasing people from other states. Like you were talking about like Ohio and PA that go to different states to fish because their states suck. And so I always love just teasing my buddies, like Tanner Ward's a hammer from Ohio. They always come up to New York to fish the worst lake in New York. Right on. So I always tease people like,
go fish. What's that, Chicago?
Yeah, exactly. It's funny how you know it. Used to be a great lake, but now it's just wretched. But usually you don't hear that about New York fishing anyway. That's bad. But I hear you, though, on that. It's like this year, granted, I don't have even close to the schedule to you guys do from an open standpoint or anything like that. But I jumped in a bunch of like local stuff and travel around a little bit. You know, it was down at Norman, Murray, things like that. Down like the prime time of when it's going down up here in New York in the Finger Lakes. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, you know what, next year, I don't even know if I'm going to like not fish any April, May tournaments just so I can go fun fish where I want to actually fish. So I totally feel you on that one.
Yeah.
But so it's already going down.
And it sucks too. It just sucks up here because it happens so fast. You know, you have like it's like there's ice, and then you have like it's kind of cold and it's fishing's tough, and then you have an awesome pre-spawn button. It's like 5 days, and then it's like they're on beds, you know, where at least when you're down south, it, you know, that period can be 2 or 3 months. But yeah, it sounds like the lake is up and it's on bed. They're on beds like crazy. That's what guys are saying. I mean, I'll know more. And St. Clair, you can kind of get by. Like I can go run into some areas where you have cooler cooler water, but all of our inland lakes, they're so small, is the fish are all doing the same thing. If they're on beds, they're all on beds. If they're, you know, out on drops, they're out on drops. But when aside from St. Clair, whatever the one fish is doing, they're all doing. So I think I'm done with pre-spawn for this season.
Well, if that's the case for Clair, then probably a bunch of your inland lakes are probably ahead of that, right?
For sure. Yeah. But they are largemouth. I mean, obviously most people want to go out there, but you know, especially like a bad wind day or something there. I have like the next county over from my house has 1,000 lakes in it. So I could just throw a dart on the map and fish. And we have a lot of good fishing, but obviously people want to get out there and do that. But I'll make whatever works with the weather.
Dang. So it's almost kind of like, is Michigan like a not talked about Minnesota in that respect? Like in regards to how
many lakes? Yeah, we have more lakes than Minnesota. Yeah.
You do?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I think we have 11,000 lakes. They're 10,000.
Why do people not talk about that?
I don't know. They want to claim something. You know, I would do it if I was that far
now. They can't fish till like next week. So yeah, they need to claim. They need something to talk about.
We probably don't. I'm sure their lakes are probably a little better than ours. I don't know. We have some really good ones, but we have a lot of ours aren't as remote. You know, almost ours are developed. A lot of docks, highly pressured fisheries. So, you know, maybe not as fun to fish, but obviously this time of year it's all good.
Yeah, I did some exploring actually, Southern Michigan, when around the time that Serious Angler actually began, which was around the time that I actually first got you on the show. I think you were back in like the 30s or something like that. But did some exploring on Southern Michigan when I was back at Notre Dame for my internship. And I would take my little Ultima up to those lakes from trying to find ones that I wouldn't get kicked off of and go bank fish for a couple hours. But I guess to your point, there are a lot of lakes in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll have to start a riff now, Michigan versus Minnesota.
Let's do it.
The battle of number of lakes. But
I don't know what they consider a lake. I think that's where we get them. Like, it's like some loophole, but we'll take it, you know. You got it.
Yeah. What's the threshold that takes a pond to a lake? Like, what is the square
footage? I don't know. It's probably some size. 30 acres or so. I don't know what it is, but.
Yeah, we'll leave that for the smart people. We're going to talk fishing. So let's talk about Logan Martin, man. I was actually really intrigued. Obviously, we were planning this show for a couple of weeks now, but one, you had a great finish at Logan Martin. And in your post on it, I was really intrigued. One, dude, I've always been a fan, one, of you as a person, but two, you know, I'm an electronics guy. And so I eat up all of your posts, especially with your side imaging, the 360 stuff that you put out there. Because if you guys don't follow Garrett, you need to. The link's down below. But he posts his screenshots of like side imaging or 360 and things that are going on, gives you a good kind of depiction of what's happening. But also we'll drop in his settings there for you too. So it's kind of like can help you along. And I've definitely copied those before.
I would say it was a good week. I finished seventh. I think I told a lot of people before the season, like that was the one I was looking forward to, which I don't think anyone was believing me. But I've been there. I stopped there before Gunnersville Elite the exact same week, I think in 2021, and I fished it like 4 hours for 2 days. So I had like 8 hours total on the lake. And I went out there and I caught 18 pounds of spots day one and like 17 and a half day two. And I didn't really know much of the lake. I just literally stopped there and fished. So that's all I had to go off of. I didn't really do – I mean, I did my research and stuff, but there wasn't a lot to see. So I'm just thinking, all right, we're going to this lake. It's absolutely loaded with spotted bass. Which is something I love, and I've already done pretty good here, you know, according to the tournament results. I can win like every tournament ever on this lake, for what I saw. So I was feeling really good. And it's that time of year where I tend to do, you know, probably some of my better work in tournaments that post spawn, you know, fish just coming offshore. That seems to kind of line up right with me. So I figured it could be a good event. And I went out there, and the first thing, of course, I tried to do was exactly what I did when I was there 3 years earlier, and it did not work at all. So like right away, which always happens, you know, it's never going to be the same, but like right away I go out there, fish a couple like the little road beds and rocky areas where I caught those big fish and just didn't catch anything. So I'm like, you know, not depressed, but I'm like, dang, this is once again, you know, you're gonna have to like work for it a little bit. I know it's weird in tournament fishing, but sometimes you gotta like work hard to do well. It sucks, but here we are. Like right away, I kind of just got fortunate. I just got it like rolling right away. Like from the first day, I just, you know, I kind of put my eggs into the offshore basket, which is what I try to do always when I go to these tournaments, just because that doesn't seem to change as much. So the first 2 days, I'll scan around a lot, fish offshore a lot. And then, you know, as the practice gets closer to the tournament, I'll really start fishing hard, especially up shallow, just because so much changes got there. You know, there's so much pressure in these big events that I don't want to go too crazy. But yeah, the first day I kind of figured out like there was a bunch of spotted bass and 8 to 10 foot on these secondary points. And there was like some kind of thread fin spawn on these secondary points. Like every fish I caught was just spin up tons of shad. And I found some of those by just fishing. And like right away I went to trying to side image. I'm like, I literally caught some fish, saw them come up on live, come up on 360. And I was like, I gotta, you know, so the first thing I did was I tried to side image and I could not see anything, which was really odd. Like it was just like, they weren't on the sonar. And like, I stood back up, started fishing. And once I threw my bait in there, they all came up again and I can see them. And I went back through, tried side imaging, couldn't see them. So like right away, I kind of realized, okay, like, you know, you can side image this lake, but it, you know, you might miss some stuff. And I think that's kind of what like gave me an edge. So I would go over some of these areas. And if I really felt confident, I would just fish them. And I'd throw like a glide bait, like I had the KGB or even the Damiki, but I just wanted to get anything over the spots. And, you know, when that bait was coming through, they'd all just lift up. And even if they didn't bite, you know, it just told me where the school was. And, you know, they don't need to bite in practice. I just want to mark as many as I could. So I figured that out early and just kind of kept turning into more. Like, I figured the thread fin spawn was on those secondary gravelly, sandy points. And then I turned it into some main lake red clay banks and clay points had gizzard shad spawn on them. And I was catching spots that were literally spitting up shad this long. Like, I've never seen anything like it. Like, they were 8 and 9 inch shad these things were eating. So I figured that out. And then, which that was really hard to find. And those fish were hard to catch, but they were all big. But had a couple of those spots. And then later in practice, I started finding them on the main river ledges. Like, they were just showing up like it was the TVA. So I kind of had just a little bit of hodgepodge of offshore spots. And in the tournament, I was just able to rotate, you know, the different deals. And when one was working, I was able to kind of hit a couple of those that were similar to that and just kind of make it work. And it was a good event. But I think the key was not getting keyed in. Like, and I love side imaging, like that's my bread and butter. But in this tournament, it was more of a fishing to find the fish and really paying attention. Like 360 was the key. I mean, it was just like, I posted one of the pictures if you guys saw. I mean, you'd throw the glide bait out there and you would just see like 20 shadows come up. And that's what those schools of fish look like on that. And that was super key. Like some of the stuff seemed obvious to me after I found it, which it wasn't. But like, if you were to look on the map, I mean, some of the spots were super obvious and no one ever fished them in the tournament with me. I think they just, you know, they were just, you just gonna side image them. So if I wanted to figure that out day one, I'm, you know, I probably miss a lot of those areas.
So you think some guys went through exactly what you're talking about and looked on side, didn't see anything?
I would. I mean, some of this stuff is just like, you know, just very obvious structure. I mean, the mapping, you know, pointed out plain as day.
Do you think some of the guys that have it, the live on their jack plate type deals, do you think they would have seen those? Or do you think that?
With my live, if I didn't know there was a school of fish there, I'm probably missing it. So like in practice, the live wasn't even the deal. It was literally all 360. When I could see the kind of the shadows and stuff, I could point it and start seeing very subtle bumps, almost looking like rocks. But if I didn't see this 360, I'd easily pass through that stuff.
So they were sucked to the bottom until you were able to pull that glide out.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like that's guys. That's one thing I've noticed with, and maybe I should keep this secret, but like the cleaner the bottom, the harder the fish are to see on the bottom usually. So like if you have sand or shell bed or gravel or this like barely any rock, those fish will tuck right in there. You'll hardly see them, especially with live. I mean, you hardly ever see those fish. If you have big boulders, if you have grass on the bottom, that makes those fish come up 6 inches, a foot, 2 feet, whatever, and they're easy to see. But the cleaner the bottom, the harder they are to see. And you got to pull out some tricks to see them.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I've learned from Andy, and I wish she was here tonight to talk about it, but especially like the Great Lakes, talking about smallmouth is when you get on some of the sand flats and you're talking about, you have like the little dunes that come through and it's kind of like they roll like waves almost on bottom. They can tuck into there and they can be sucked to the bottom. You can't see them on side because they'll blend in with that. And it's hard to get that reading because it's can't go over that lip. But when you can, how he finds them anyway is 2D, because you can go over them and see in those actual lips. But also sense. Like, I feel like with some guys, they can find that with 360 too. But to that regard, like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can miss where I think, as much as we want to talk technology, and I really don't want to go down that rabbit hole of the whole live conversation and be another podcast that's talking about it. But I think one, 360 is invaluable, but I think the biggest thing is fit actually just going fishing is still always going to be a part of
sport.
Like, in regards to talking about how you use that glide as a search bait, which is something we've talked about on the show several times, but like how you'd be able to see those fish rise and get them to say hello to you by just simply throwing a bigger presentation. And I want to have you expand on that here in a second, but to your point, to reinforce this, is I know there's probably some other stories that some pros have had, but my personal experience was actually this past weekend. We fished a lake that was probably 6 to 7 foot visibility. And in practice, there's a guy that had gone down the stretch that I did really well in the tournament. And he went, he's like, oh, when we were just chatting, I had told him where I'd caught these fish. And he's like, oh man, I went and practiced and it was crystal clear. And I looked around, I never saw a single fish. It was a ghost town. But I noticed the same thing, but as soon as you pull up that glide, those fish can come out of nowhere.
Really?
Like, yeah. And I don't think we give them enough credit for being able to hide as well as we do. You can go through and you're like, oh, I don't see a fish anywhere. But man, something about that big bait, dude, it can just, I think it'll surprise you how well these fish can actually hide. To your point, like you said, you might not even known they were even there if you didn't pull it out. But like, was that something you were strictly using as a search bait to get these fish to rise and then pull out that jig head minnow, or was that something you're actually catching them on to?
It was, I think I might have caught one or two on it, none in the tournament. It was a search bait for some reason. They would go crazy and follow it, or even not. Some of them would just come off a couple feet, but you know, I didn't catch much. I really didn't have any intention to either. You know, I didn't really sit there and really try to go after them and slow it down and twitch it. It's like, I just wanted to, I mean, I was almost working it. I was almost just swimming it. Like, I didn't really care how it looked. I just wanted something huge over their head, make them curious, and then show me, because I'll come back with something easier to catch them on after that. Which I was surprised. I actually thought I would catch them on it because they are kind of crazy. But in the tournament, the jig head minnow is so damn effective. It's hard to, it's hard to play around with the other stuff, you know, like I could just throw that over there and just kind of pick them off one by one. So that's what I did. I threw it at some brush piles and in some areas when I was done and they would get on it, but we had like no current. We had no wind most of the days. It was straight sun. It wasn't really the right conditions, but as a search tool, it was phenomenal.
Oh boy. Wrong pipe. Perfect timing. expand on as I'm choking here. If you guys know, when you swallow water and it goes down the wrong pipe, never had this happen on a podcast before. talk about like, were you using that glide in regard to, well, would you actually pitch it out, have them rise, and then throw the jig head minnow, or would you simply just come back around once they've risen up a little bit and solely fish the jig head minnow? That makes sense.
Yeah, so in practice they'd come up and I'd throw it back in there just because there was like 30 of them on mostly spots. So, you know, a couple would come up, look at it. I wouldn't catch those ones, but you'd see a bunch of them in the area and throw it out there and just catch one or two, check the size. In the tournament itself, I just started with a jig head minnow. I would literally start. I just have the waypoint from where the fish were. I'd start fishing, and it felt weird because I didn't see anything. Like, I'd literally pull up. I'm looking around with 360 with live. I don't see anything. And I'd throw the jig at a minnow, just trusting the waypoint. And then all the fish would come out, and I'd catch one. But, yeah, so in the tournament, it didn't really play a whole lot. But in practice, it was pull them out, catch a couple. You know, maybe – and that might not be the best way to attack that situation. But, you know, in practice, you can kind of be quick and a little bit sloppy. I'm not trying to be the most effective. I'm just trying to get a couple clues and move on and find the next area.
Yeah, like I know some people with smallmouth, more speaking on team tournaments, because it's quite a tall task to try and do this when you're solo, but they'll use the glide as a means to, like when you're going on a stretch and you're, say you're throwing a spy bait or hair or jerk bait, whatever, and sometimes it can be hard to get those bigger fish to get up and noticeable and get fired up, where some one guy will be throwing the glide with no intention of catching anything, just for those bigger fish to show themselves. And then the second guy throws a follow-up, which is probably something a little bit secretive, but I know it's something that I've seen some guys try to do solo. So I was just curious if that was something that you implemented in the tournament. But with the jig head minnow, is it something that you were literally just casting and rolling? Like, was it a certain depth that you were keeping this at, or is it basically you were just casting around blind and just reeling? Like, was there any sort of like cadence to it?
Yeah, so I would know where the spot is right that I want to cast. I just throw it out there. I'd keep it like a foot off the bottom, and I had an 1/8 ounce head, so I was working a reel, so I'm almost hovering it. I'm just, you know, just get, I kind of have my twitch, or, you know, whatever. It's like hard to explain the twitch, but you know it when mm-hmm. you know it. I'm just kind of twitching it. And all of a sudden something would come off the bottom and you just kind of tease them into it. But yeah, I noticed, like in practice, I noticed they wanted to hit it, or they wanted to start it at the bottom. Sometimes they want it like middle of the water column, but they seem to want me to get real close. And then once they came up, I'd kind of keep bringing it until they bought it, or bit it. But I would just, yeah, I'd throw it out there, mm-hmm. put off the bottom, and just, you know, I call the ghost of Mickey is what I call. So I'm just literally, I'm watching it, but I'm not really seeing any fish. And then I'm kind of hoping the fish come out of nowhere on it.
Quite literally chasing ghosts.
Yeah. Will. Yeah. But those schools of fish, they were, you know, even though you couldn't see them, they were like dead on every day for the most part on where I found them the first time.
Yeah. And I love that saying too, because one of our guests for the latter half of the show, Adam Bartuzik, literally has a series that he did called Chasing Ghosts, where he basically you go and chase Cisco chasers for smallmouth. Oh, nice. But you know, dude, I love that just a confidence in regard to what you found in an area. And I feel like, which is kind of crazy, like in regard to saying it might be somewhat old school, where you're basically just fishing, and I think new age, some guys might be scared of what you're talking about, where they might pan around and not see anything and they might ditch, where you had enough of that intuition to know that what you saw in practice, how those fish were behaving, you knew they were there. It's just a matter of getting to just come out of their shell.
Mm-hmm. And like, so my travel partner, Chris, we were both doing the same thing, and we didn't set the world on fire in practice, but we caught like a lot of 2.5 pounders. And high 2 pounders and stuff. So like, we were kind of thinking that it was going to be like everyone had 12.5 pounds, 13 pounds. And like, when I think I had 13.25 day one, and I literally told my co-angler, I'm like, dude, I'm going to be happy with 60th. And I'm guessing I'm going to be like 70th to 90th, just based off what we saw in practice. And I came in and I'm in 21st or something, 22nd. And I think that that's because of that strategy. Like, I think if you know, the traditional way to fish now is to see the fish. That's how, mm-hmm. you know, that's how I normally fish too. But I think that that was just a lot of 1.5 to 2 pound fish. Like, everybody was stacked at 8.5 to 11 pounds in that tournament. And I think maybe those better fish, you know, they were easier to catch doing the style of fishing we were doing. So like, we didn't think it was easy by any means. It's never easy, but we caught a ton of better than 2 pound fish doing that. And, you know, just kind of maybe had like a better feel on, you know, not the better feel, but we had like the wrong feel on maybe what the majority of the guys were doing. So like, we were kind of almost like a little shocked on not how low the weights were, I guess. And that's like the first time in the last 4 years that I felt that way. Just, but that's just simply not because we were the world's best fisherman. We just kind of got on this deal and it was just working, you know? So it was kind of nice for once to come in the way and be like, wow, I didn't have like the most special day ever in my standards, but like I'm actually doing good in the tournament. Usually you come in and you're like, I just grinded as hard as I could and I'm in 140th because everyone's so good. Like that's usually how these go nowadays.
Yeah. That's one thing I want to talk about is this, the current, you know, competition of the Opens. But before we do, Jim Lopez here is asking one, you hit on the cadence, how you're just swimming your swim bait, but talk about your quickly your setup for that glide, but also the setup for the jig head minnow as well.
Okay. Yeah. So cadence with swim bait, I'll just do it all. So yeah, the cadence with the glide bait, I work them similar to like a jerk bait with less rod. So it's more like I'm still kind of pushing the rod down, but it's a lot of real, like little half turns. And then if the fish comes for it, I'll speed it up or like maybe I'll jerk it hard and stop it. But it's essentially like a less of an action than a jerk bait with my rod and reel. But the bait, of course, is going crazy. But I work it like a jerk bait. I'm not. That's how I do it. I don't, you know, some guys are probably a lot better than me. And on that, I got a 784 Douglas LRS, which is probably, it's 784 is misleading. It's like a 7.8 heavy, maybe a little heavier than a heavy with like a deep crankbait bend almost to it. So it's a big, strong rod, could easily handle a 3-ounce bait, but has a deep bend and you won't pull the hooks out. And then just a big casting rail, 20-pound Sunline Shooter, which is a little stiffer of a fluorocarbon than the Sniper, but I like it because it doesn't stretch and it gives that bait better action. And then on the Damiki, 1/8-ounce Gamagatsu ball head, I threw a ton of baits, like the 4-inch Big Bite Sensation Minnow was a big one, you know, rotated through some crazy Japanese stuff, some crappie baits, whatever I could do to get bit. But the cadence on that is like, it's almost like, I mean, to be honest, you should just watch Koya Fish and not have me talk about it. But I really try to mimic him, and I'm getting closer. I mean, I'll never be there, but I'm getting better. And it's kind of like this downward twitch, and it's just like a constant reel, and just it's really about finding the right slack while you're twitching. Like you want it tight, you don't want it too tight, you don't want it too loose, but you just got to go out. Yeah, you want your bait just to kind of roll, and it's just a gentle, easy roll. And then when they come, you just kind of speed it up and kind of rise the bait and just. You know, you just want the fish to kind of swim to the bait and it gets heavy. And I know it's really vague to say that. It's like, I can't really even explain the technique, but it's just like a subtle twitch and reel. And on that, I got a 6.8 medium light Douglas X Matrix, 10-pound Sunline braid to 8 to 10-pound Sunline Sniper leader, short leader, like a 4-footer.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So pretty short. Was there any reason why it was so short?
Because he has a short one and I'm just trying to copy Koya at this point. So he says it's more action. His is like 12 inches. I don't feel comfortable with that. So I'm like, I'll do 4 feet. That's good enough for me.
Yeah. It's crazy. Cause you got guys that talk about like, oh dude, like I feel like I get more bites when I have a 20-foot leader and here's, you know, Master Finesse himself. And he's got 12 inch leader.
Well, that's how I was. Yeah. I felt like more bites to the longer leader. And then I saw him fishing. I was like, that's not true. Cause he's killing everybody.
Yeah. And it was like, I think it was Toledo. They were talking about, he had like 15-pound braid, I believe it was, or 15-pound braid to 16-pound fluoro or something. I'm probably butchering that, but it's around that.
No, you're right. Anyway. It might even be like 10-pound to like a 16-pound fluoro. It's a very heavy fluoro that he uses most of the times.
Yeah. Which I think people were very shocked by, which watch him just like saying that just so people stop throwing light line. Cause there's like, yeah, there's guys like, looking. Yeah. Cause there's guys too that are out there throwing six and it's, and they're catching them all the same. I think it's just time. Like in your point, I think it's just somebody that's put in the time to learn the different cadences of things and learn how those fish react to those baits on live, when to throw something bigger, throw it smaller, because I feel like it started out as this little micro bait, you know, guys throwing like the baby Z2s and things like that. And now it's like, you're seeing these, I think they're Raid is the one that makes them, but like the ones that are like 8 inches long that guys are throwing now, like it just keeps getting, like it's just crazy, this rabbit hole we're in. But the baits that you mentioned anyway, I have those linked down below to Omnia. People want to go grab them. The baits that you did well in the tournament with. But getting back to what we're talking about with the Opens, you know, it's You're a dang hammer. You're a former Elite Series pro that did fairly well in several tournaments. And like looking at the lineup of people, man, like it's freaking stout. What is it like? Cause you've been in the Opens gauntlet, obviously to qualify for the Elites and then trying to get back on here. What's been the progression like from your eyes? Like what has been the biggest change? And was it gradual or was it like year by like 1 year?
I'd say it was, the sport's always gotten better every year, but it seemed like last year in the EQs, it was like, or the first year of the EQs, like it just went through the roof. And I'm sitting there like, cause like you have a good, like I've been doing this for a long time now, you know? And you have a good gauge of when you get off the water, like of how the lake's fishing and how your weight is and where you're going to be. And there was just a lot of times last year where I'm coming in and it's like, I'm like doing worse than I was on the Elite Series. And I'm thinking like, you know, it's like a very humbling thing. Cause you're like, this shouldn't be this way, you know, like what's going on. And, you know, I just kind of figured out, I was like, man, maybe I'm just like slipping. I don't know. Like this is just kind of weird. And, you know, obviously now looking at this year on the Elites, it wasn't a coincidence, you know, like obviously pretty much all eight or nine of those guys are going to make the Classic that qualified. So the way that they designed this tournament program, it's exactly what they want. They're going to create, you know, this ultra competitive environment to push the best guys in the world into the Elite Series. So but that's a lot of fun. Like I sit here and I look at, you know, being in this situation, and it's super hard to just get a check. It's incredibly hard to get top tens to win all that stuff. And I've had plenty of opportunity to go a different route, in fishing as far as what trail I'm fishing, like definitely for as far as financial stability goes, I've had way easier or not easier, but you know, different routes to go, with different trails. And, you know, the reason I'm into fishing is to see how I stack up against the best in the world. So I think this is where I need to be. And then, you know, to qualify for the Elite Series and continue doing that. And that kind of goes with that. So it's been a lot of fun. It's made it's made me completely reevaluate the way I fish. And I'm probably a little bit behind on the tech as far as some guys, just because, you know, I've been doing it more and I probably have more bad habits, you know, or more things I want to hold on to going into these events. But I feel like I've made some really good progression the last, I don't know, say 18 months that, you know, I'm excited to kind of show off on some of these events. I've had some really close calls. It felt like the first three tournaments, I had like the three best practices of my life and thought I was going to have some really special events, and it just didn't come together. And it's nice to kind of get this one and have a good event and hopefully, you know, get it rolling a little bit.
Well, it seems like it reinforces the good practice curse. Yeah. You know, like you're saying Logan Martin, how it sucked and you had a top 10. Mm-hmm. It's funny how I keep seeing instances like that over and over and over again. But due to your point, like, I don't think it's a discredit to you or what you've been doing. I think it's a highlight to what everybody's been talking about, you know, and that fishing's changing. But mm-hmm. We had Buddy Gross on the show last week and he talked about exactly like I think if we put a 30-second transcript of what you just said versus what Buddy said, it's probably pretty damn close to the same thought process of, you know, they think they're behind in regards to the current tech where they've been masters. Like you guys have been the masters of Cytomagic 360. You know, I'd put you in that bucket with guys that are very, very good at being at the console, seeing things on Cytomagic, seeing things on 360. You know, and that's where Buddy thinks that the age of the guy at the console putting in time on side imaging and down imaging, things like that, is over. Thinks it's a forward game, which is it's cool, but it's also sucky in that regard, because
yeah,
I do think there's something to the grind, you know, of a guy yeah. like yourself or a Buddy. There's the respect to the guy that's willing to put in the hours and hours and hours on end of searching. You know, aside, there's something about that. That's one that's fun, because there is something I think I'm sure you can talk to it too. Like finding that needle in a haystack on side, there's just something about it that's just satisfying. But yeah, I don't know. Am I off base with that?
I would say for the next few years you're dead on. You're not off base about finding the needle in the haystack. There's nothing better than idling for 6 hours and being having like heat stroke down on Kentucky Lake, and then all of a sudden, you know, when you're ready to give up, a bunch of little dots just show up. That is amazing. But I think with forward sonar on these lakes right now, they're just vulnerable. I think we're quick to just dismiss how it was when Lake Master came out for the TVA and side imaging. They found schools that were half a mile long of bass, and you just go there and literally catch them every cast until they stop biting, and then you would leave and go to the next school and catch them every cast. You wouldn't even think about changing baits or colors like that. If you talk to the old school ledge guys, that's how it was. So we might be in that era for the forward sonar, or maybe not. Maybe it just stays forever. But I think Mother Nature will always slightly change to protect itself. So it might just not have changed yet. And in 4 years, we might be like, dude, I can't believe we could catch them on live scope. Like, what's going on? You know, but I think, I think it's not fair to discredit a lot of the younger talent in the sport, because the forward sonar might just be hitting at the right time. You might actually just be seeing the first real generation of people that have dedicated their lives to bass fishing coming in. The days of like, even me, like I really went at it hard when I was 16 probably, but my goal was to be a professional hockey player. And I was like, oh shoot, my dad's 5'8". I'm going to be 150 pounds. This ain't going to work, you know? So I better try getting competitive with something else. And there's a lot of stories, you know, guys are, hey, I hated my job when I was 30, so I quit and fished the elites. And I think now you might be seeing a lot of kids that are coming in, and when they were 5 years old, their goals were to fish. They didn't play sports. Their whole lives were dedicated to this. So I wouldn't be so quick to, and I'm not saying to you, but just for everyone, I wouldn't be so quick to discredit these guys, because I think you're seeing a true athlete approach to the sport now, where guys are truly committing everything. They're not partying. They're not having relationships. They're spending 300 days a year at it, and they're figuring it out.
Yeah, no, I completely agree 100% on that. And that's one I think we've been talking about. I think people that understand the sport will agree on that. I don't think this has anything to do with anglers. Anglers are going to adjust with the times, but like, to your point though, about the hockey thing, like, I think you look at the current state of the NHL, like, that's a whole new generation or age now too. Yep. With that, like, 5'8", 150 pounds, you might be fine in the current state of the NHL. There isn't that much physicality anymore, you know? Like, yeah. Look at some of the rookie class from this past year. They're all small for the most part.
Right.
You know, besides what's his face from the Rangers. I think that he's just an anomaly. I'm trying to remember his name.
That's fun, isn't it? They might be on. I have to go watch that game.
Which playoffs are always incredible. Don't get me down rabbit hole, because we're getting on another hockey guy here. And we'll be on that for forever. But I completely agree with you. But it's going to be interesting to see where it goes with that, you know, especially opens wise down the next couple of years. And
it's not getting any easier. You're just going to have to dedicate to it to do well. You're not, I don't know what else to say besides that. It's just going to take more dedication, you know, and more time than ever. And, you know, some guys can do it. Some guys, you know, financially can't. Some guys mentally can. It's going to weed out a lot of guys. There's going to be a lot of turnover in the sport. You know, it might become a sport like the NFL, where the average career is 2 to 3 years. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's certainly changing.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And I think that's part of why there is some of the whole negative conversation around it. I think that's just a scapegoat for some people that are just worrisome about their careers. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I mean, if that was somebody where I'm not up to snuff with that, like, yeah, I'd be worried about it too, but I think there's definitely some wrong approaches being made. But I think the people like yourself will accept of what change is coming and try to do their damnedest to get up to speed on that, right? You know, so it's,
yeah,
but I mean, again, that's been kind of, go ahead.
Yeah, we're going on a rabbit hole, but the whole basis of this sport is to create products to catch more fish, right? That's literally number one. And then the idea of it is, the golden saying is, it's all about time on the water, time on the water, time on the water. So to like kind of stray away from those two things all of a sudden, because some guys we're not familiar with are doing well, is super dangerous in my opinion.
Yeah. We've said this multiple times on here. And I find it hilarious. And, you know, Mercer has a great point of it where it's like, it seems like lately we always try to avoid the forward facing sonar conversation, but then for whatever reason, it just comes back into our lives. Like it's Andy made the analogy last night that it's like the Thanos. It's just inevitable. Like it's just going to happen.
Yeah.
If you're going to talk about fishing today, but yeah, it's never, I don't think this has ever been an angler problem. And I don't think it ever will be an angler problem. This is, if there's anything to talk about the whole tech thing, it's a trail and it's the company came with the product. Like it's, and there's really no blame to that. It's just sports progressing and some people like change, some people don't.
Right.
But yeah, but we'll put that to the side because we're trying to.
Yeah. Cause you said we were going to be here for an hour. We might end up being here for like 3-4 hours. Sorry.
Yeah. We might have to bring the boys in now before we go too long, but I guess looking ahead the remainder of the schedule, you know, getting back in the right direction after Logan Martin, obviously coming home to St. Clair for one of the events, but how are you feeling about the last remainder of the season?
I feel really good. I told a lot of people coming in this year, I said the first three are scary, not because I don't feel like I can do well on them, but you got Okeechobee, which like Florida's always tricky, and I just suck in Florida at this point. Like I just suck in Florida. So you had Okeechobee, you had Ouachita, which is a, you know, should have set up pretty well for me, but those cold water events, I fished enough of them to know that crazy stuff happens. You get floods, you get ice, you get, you know, things that are hard to deal with. And then Santee Cooper, another one that was easy to bomb. So I figured the first three were going to be not hard, but just probably the hardest to be consistent in, to put it that way. So we got those out of the way. The rest of the schedule, I feel really good about. Like Eufaula, we were there last year the exact same time. I felt like I was really close to doing well and just missed a little bit and kind of came home and worked on what I missed on. So I feel pretty good about there. Obviously, St. Clair. I've only fished. I mean, we had two elites there and kind of didn't go my way. So I've kind of worked at that a couple of years and hopefully I can kind of show what I've learned. And then Leech should be amazing. I've only heard good things about their upper or Mississippi River. I've never been, but, you know, another one that, you know, should be right up my wheelhouse. And then Hartwell and in the fall, I've been there a couple of times that time of year. So I have no excuses to finish the season strong. I don't know, you know, how it's going to work out. But if I, you know, if I finish in the top 40 for the next or get a check for the next for the rest of the season, it might be real interesting. The way it's looking. So
yeah, I'd say I think the only thing you'd ever want to change on the schedule is start it off in Texas or starting off in Florida. Like if you could just take the elite schedule, I think your butt would be on the elites next year.
And even the Okeechobee, the Okeechobee tournament is like so disheartening because I literally only had two areas. I had a tough practice, but I had two areas. I'm like, I'm gonna spend like half my day here, half my day here. One of the areas was 200 feet from Scott Martin, and the other areas was where four of the top 20 were fishing. So it like I, you know, I've been around them every tournament. I just haven't been putting it together during the tournament. So that's why this was kind of nice to have happen and just get things moving again.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that everybody says about Florida, right? Is you can be literally 20 feet off from a 30 pound bag and catch 10 pounds. It's,
and I can't fish slow anyways. And I know that, but you gotta just fish slow.
Yeah. But there's those pictures, dude, of like, literally 100-yard stretch and there's 80 boats, like half the fields right there.
That was I've never seen anything like that. That was crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty absurd. Well, dude, before we wrap up here, is there anything the folks should know coming up or how they say if they want to come and get a guide trip with you up on St. Clair? What's the best way to get in touch with you and anything coming up that people should look out for?
Yeah, if you want to go on St. Clair, just reach out through social media really right now. We're on a website, don't have anything up yet, but Facebook or Instagram, GPAW Catfishing. We'll make it happen. We'll go out and crush some smallmouth. Aside from what's coming up, I don't, you know, just kind of hanging out here. Going to run as many guide trips as I can. And then, you know, the five opens that we mentioned. And life is good. And it looks like I didn't get hit with the tornado. So I can't complain.
Well, yeah, we made through the show tornado list. But hopefully the remainder of your day stays the same there.
I think we are. No,
hopefully the
the rumbling's gone. I think I had survived, hopefully.
Good. Good. Well, dude, it's been good to catch up, and hopefully your first year as a married man is also going well.
It's going well, definitely. Same to you as well, I may add.
Yeah. Yeah. We were just sitting there like offline. We were chit-chatting about, it seemed like literally for whatever reason that was over the winter. We had both gotten married. So we both realized it was 6+ months ago.
Yeah.
I guess that's how much time flies these
one
days.
One year coming up.
Yeah. Getting old. Well, buddy, it was really good to catch up with you and chat. And we got to make this more of a consistent thing, man.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me, man. Thanks for following, guys. And yeah, we'll see you soon.
All right, pal. We'll talk to you soon.
We'll see ya.
All right, folks. Mr. Garrett Paquette. I know we were captainless for tonight, but always good to catch up with some old friends. And we got more of that to do for the remainder of the show here. But if you guys haven't already and you're not following Garrett, the social media and all the products that he used for that open on Logan Martin are linked down below. Highly encourage you guys to follow him. Like I mentioned, in addition to obviously just the content, but he does post a lot of pretty educational stuff if you're looking to dial in your side imaging 360, down imaging, things like that, some Lake Master tips. He posts some pretty good content around that to help you guys dial that in. So encourage you to go take a look, check out some of the products that he was using from the Opens event. But the show is not over. We got another whole part two coming up here with some more old pals of the show. We got Mr. Matt Pangrack from Bass Talk Live and Mr. Adam Bartuzik, Mr. Crappie Chronicles himself. We'll be getting on here, but a quick message from X2 Power and we'll get these boys back on the show.
In the world of battery power, a word to the wise: compromise elsewhere.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with Garrett Paquette. Great friend of the show, great angler and a great dude. We've had Garrett on in the past. If you're an OG of the Serious Angler podcast, you guys know who Garrett Paquette is, at least from the show standpoint. You should know who he is as an angler because he's had some great events back on the Bassmaster Elite Series, and hopefully he gets back there. We're definitely rooting for him to re-qualify, and I know the guys on the trail love him. We'll love to see him back there. He's a great person, and there's a lot to learn from, as you guys could tell from tonight. And glad no tornadoes hit during that show, and hope people in Michigan are all safe. But great show there. Appreciate y'all. As we said in the beginning, you guys will announce on social the winner of the Blackfish gear giveaway. And I'll actually announce the winner right here for you guys for MP3, because I do mention it in part two. You guys know the live shows. We have the full episode that has part one and two involved on YouTube. But the MP3s don't go up until, you know, we have the Wednesday morning drop and then the Friday drop, which is our part two of the show, which will feature for this one Adam Bartuzik and BTL's Matt Pangrack. So I do announce it in that one as well. But we will announce it here for the MP3 folk because they left a review on MP3, which was the premise of the giveaway. And that is Creek Runner 01. So you guys left a great rating and review for us. Appreciate that. That was part of getting involved. You could have left a review saying that we sucked. That's perfectly fine. We appreciate all feedback. But he left a great review. He was a random winner that was thrown into the mix here for people that entered. There was a bunch of people that entered. Appreciate y'all for keeping active with our platform. But reach out to us on email, either at theseriousangler@gmail.com or DM us on social media, and we'll figure out which two sun hoodies from Blackfish Gear we're going to send out your way. We kept those open-ended. We will the whole year, guys. You know, probably the next one might be some summer or breathable rain gear. You get to pick your size, color, you know, the whole nine yards. We're not going to pick all that for you. We're going to let you choose your whole thing. More incentive to get involved on the Blackfish Gear giveaways, but congrats again, Creek Runner 01. Reach out to us and we'll get all that hooked up for you. Congrats on winning that. But guys, next episode, MP3 wise, will drop on Friday again with Matt Pangrack and Adam Bartuzik. We talk about their St. Jude's the Dick Hiley Bass Classic win that they had, which is big time over there. A lot of hammers in it. We talk about potentially getting podcasts, more podcasts like ourselves involved in that event next year. We'd love to see Andy and I go and fish it. We do a little rapid fire fun questions, and we go down a lot of rabbit holes. So super fun episode. Look forward to that coming on Friday. But of course, you can always check the live streams. Join us live every Tuesday night on the Sears Angler Network YouTube channel. But stay tuned. Appreciate y'all. You guys are amazing. And we'll see you on the next one.